Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Happy September, everybody. I think we can all smile because there's finally some light at the end of the proverbial NBA tunnel. It's now officially September, and that means that Media Day and the opening of Rockets training camp, it's just 3 short weeks away. On that positive note, welcome in to another episode of Locked On Rockets. I am Ben Dubose, and this is the show where we talk anything and everything related to the Houston Rockets. We're the most frequent podcast covering the team, and today's show is brought to you courtesy of SeatGeek. Download their mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets, and the promo code LORockets gets you a $20 rebate in the mail off of your first purchase. Again, today's show sponsored by SeatGeek. Our last show, we did something a little different. With it being late August and a lot of the topics being picked clean, really, over the past few weeks, I launched into a show about media credentialing and what it's like being a media member covering the NBA. It's a subject I often get asked about, but never have the time to fully address because usually there's so many stories to write and tell about the Rockets that I don't have time to get into the stories of the journalists, you know, the people behind the news. So if you haven't heard that episode, it was our last in August. I urge you guys to listen. But with that out of the way, and with it now September, let's get back to basketball. This time of year is really big for projections, with free agency and trade season largely drawing to a close. I mean, there's going to be a few more moves, such as Donatas Moniunis with the Rockets, but by and large, we know what most NBA teams are going to look like. So it's a very big time of year for predictions and for models. So you have national writers and their analytics models putting out a lot of various projections about how the Rockets and other teams are going to fare in this upcoming season. And one of the bigger models, and it's also one that's been bullish on the Rockets, is RPM over at ESPN. It's a formula by Kevin Pelton. He's an NBA writer for ESPN Insider. And basically what it does, it uses the RPM projections and a team's projected rotations to assess their performance. And, you know, deviation from the mean. And, you know, it ranks the teams 1 through 15 in the West. And based on this, as we discussed last week, it has the Rockets 5th in the West, winning 46 games. And within striking distance of 3rd. Which is the Jazz at 47 games. So considering that the Rockets were an 8 seed last year, that went 41-41, putting them as a 5 seed within striking distance of the number 3, that's a pretty optimistic model. And we talked about it last week with Salman Ali of Red Nation Hoops. But one thing that's interesting is that we have not heard yet from Kevin Pelton, the source himself. Well, Kevin stopped by earlier this week on Locked On NBA. That's the national show as part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And he talked about a few different teams and where they are listed in his rankings. So before we get any further, I want to play what he said about the Rockets and where he has them in the Western Conference seedings.
So the Houston Rockets on my PAC system come out very strong. And my system is obviously only offensive based, but it has them as really, obviously the Warriors are through the roof. And then it, I think, had them, I don't have it in front of me, either the second or third best offensive team in the Western Conference. And at some point, that probably makes them the second or third or fourth best team offensively in the NBA. You win a lot of games if you're top five, either offensively or defensively. What do you see on where the Rockets are?
Yeah, RPM has them 5th offensively, and I think that's pretty reasonable when you look at the fact that there's a lot more shooting now around James Harden with Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, and you know they're going to space the floor more than they did last year, where they played a lot of the time with even two 7-footers on the court with Capella and Howard. And you put that in D'Antoni's system, it looks like this is going to be a really good offense. It also might be an equally atrocious defense because of those changes.
Those were the words of Kevin Pelton. Now, first, Locked On NBA, the first guy you heard, that's hosted by David Locke, the radio play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz. And when he references PAC, that's another analytics model similar to RPM, although PAC just measures offense. Now, the formula is private. It's a proprietary thing from David. But what it is, it's PAC because it's points above average created. And it shows the Rockets as an excellent offensive team. Top five, as he said, actually better than that. Last year on an individual basis, PAC ranked Harden the third best player in the NBA behind just Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant. So, again, it's not just RPM. There are a lot of analytics models that are high on the Rockets, particularly on offense, and to the point where really a top five offense, I think most of us are expecting it. You know, the Rockets have James Harden, who played at least on offense at a near MVP level again last year. They've added Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, which gives them more shooting. They've added Mike D'Antoni as head coach, one of the more well-regarded offensive coaches in NBA history. So there are a lot of reasons to be optimistic about the Rockets on the offensive side of the ball, to the point where a lot of folks take it for granted. With that said, where there's a big divergence of opinion is on the defensive side. Simply put, are the Rockets going to be a bad defensive team or a mediocre defensive team? I think we all accept they're not going to be especially good. Mike D'Antoni doesn't have a track record as a great defensive coach. And more important than that, the Rockets just don't have a proven rim protector. You know at power forward that Ryan Anderson's a below average defender and, you know, average at best rebounder. Clint Capella at center, you know, you're hoping that he takes a step forward and that his body continues to fill out. But this is someone who's very thin, has yet to play more than 19 minutes a game. So until you have more proven rim protection inside, I think it's safe to say the Rockets are not going to be an elite defensive team. But are they mediocre or are they bad? That's going to be a big, really, it could determine the season because that gap cannot be understated. The Suns teams of Mike D'Antoni from the mid-2000s, they were first in the league in offense and in the mid-teens in defense. And that was a recipe between an offense that good and a defense that was respectable to win 55 to 60 games every year and be in the mix. Whereas, you know, the Rockets last year, now they did not have a top five offense. They were seventh or eighth in offensive efficiency, depending on what rating service you use. But they were in the 20s in defense. And so they could not overcome, a defense in the 20s. And so you had a 41 and 41 eight seed. What's interesting to me is that the models themselves actually have the Rockets as a respectable defensive team. RPM, the model used by Kevin Pelton at ESPN, has the Rockets ranked 16th in the league, which is perfectly mediocre and something that you can win a lot of games with if it's coupled with the top five offense that we all expect. However, that's simply the data. There seems to be a divergence between the data and the eye test. We heard Kevin use the phrase equally atrocious when referring to the Rockets defense. And I'm also going to read you his recap on ESPN Insider of the Rockets in these RPM standings, which, again, lists them at five in the West. Kevin says, RPM projects the Rockets to be a top five offense next year, but they'll still struggle to reach 45 wins if their defense is worse than an optimistic projection of 16th in the league. So you can see even right there that Kevin seems to have a little bit of a difference of opinion with the data. He calls that projection optimistic. So quite simply, why are the models and the eye test so different? What are the models sniffing out that, you know, the leading national columnists, and it's not just Kevin, we've had others on the show who have said the same thing, that, you know, I remember Shlomo Sprung saying that he thinks 41 and 41 is a fair barometer for the Rockets until they prove otherwise. So what are the models seeing that the analysts are not, or vice versa? What are the analysts sniffing out that the models can't? I've got a few theories. We'll get to it in a second. But for now, I need to pay the bills, and let's throw a shout out to our friends at SeatGeek. Because buying tickets online for sports like the Rockets games, it's been a confusing process for quite a while. It's always hard to find the best deal for the right game or the show that you want to go to. And many of the older ticket sites, they don't want to change that. That's because the confusion works to their advantage. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans like us to buy and sell tickets. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports fans. They do all of the price comparisons for you by searching multiple ticket sites to ensure that you get the best possible deal. They also want to help you get the most bang for your buck, and they do that by grading every ticket on the site. Each ticket gets a grade from 1 to 100, with 100 being the best deal, so you can very easily find any underpriced seats and get the best deals for your budget. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, here's what you do. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab in the app and click add a promo code. Then enter the promo code LO Rockets, all one word, no spaces. SeatGeek will then send you $20 in the mail after you've made your first ticket purchase. So remember, download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Rockets today. Anyway, back to the Rockets. My first theory about why people might undervalue the Rockets defensively was the potential role of Donatas Moniunis, who's not yet signed, and thus not a part of any official predictions. I think Moniunis is important to the Rockets because he gives them more versatility up front. You know Ryan Anderson is going to be a tough matchup defensively in certain situations, so having the versatility, someone like Moniunis that's taller, bulkier, can do some different things than Ryan Anderson, I think that option is very important as the Rockets try to, you know, mix and match whatever gives them the best matchups on a given night. However, I'm pretty sure the models are not factoring in Moniunis into their, you know, seedings for why the Rockets are 16th, so because he's not on the roster. So what that shows you is that while, yes, Moniunis might make the Rockets a better defensive team, we saw in 2014-2015 that he can certainly be part of a very good defensive club, he's not the reason that they're already higher on the Rockets' defense than a lot of the analysts. One broad trend that I think could be at play is just how bad the lowlights were last year. You know, Matt Moore at CBS, his colleague Zach Harper, every time they mention the Rockets, they throw out some comment about, you know, Rockets transition defense gif, and then they shudder and, you know, have to look away for minutes at a time. And they're not wrong, but I think sometimes, you know, in this Vine culture that we live in, it's easy for this stuff to take on a life of its own. And in reality, that's actually easier to fix. One thing that's generally true across the board in basketball, it's easier to go from bad to mediocre than it is to go from mediocre to good. And in the case of the Rockets and some of these extreme low lights, transition defense, these complete lapses, that's what they are, lapses. It's not that they are unable to do it. For example, even though the Rockets had these horrific moments last year, they were not awful defensively. They were bad, yeah, but their efficiency was generally around 21st, 22nd. You know, there are a lot of teams worse. There are 7-8 teams, you know, all the way down to 29 and 30 that were way worse than the Rockets. So if you have these lowlights and yet you're not, you know, at, you know, historical lowlights, and you're not at the bottom of the league, then obviously there are periods where you show a pulse. And there were periods last year where the Rockets did play quality defense and were able to do some things. So we're not talking about the Rockets needing to overhaul the roster and change everything to be a competent defense. It's not that they are unable. What you are trying to fix are lapses. And so when you bring in a few new players, more importantly, you bring in a new coach and a new system, there's optimism for them being able to do it, especially because they did 2 years ago, and there are still a lot of pieces from that 2014-2015 team that are still there, especially at the 1-3 spots. Pat Beverly and Trevor Ariza, they have been above-average defensive players in the NBA as recently as the last couple of years. James Harden certainly has his moments. KJ McDaniels, if he hits the rotation, he can be a dynamic defensive player. Who else? Corey Brewer. Now, Brewer is an inefficient defensive player. He gambles too much, but there are times that he will get you big steals and big turnovers from how he plays the passing lanes. So, again, this is not a horrific defense that you are trying to just overhaul and get from being historically bad. What you're trying to do is eliminate those lapses, and the lapses are rare. That's why people, you know, are so aghast at seeing them. And, you know, if you eliminate those lapses, can that alone make them, you know, a mediocre defensive team? It might. You know, and that's a big picture thing. Again, I'm not saying I know more than Matt Moore and Zach Harper, because I don't. I just think when you don't follow the team day in, day out, it's easy to get fixated on trends, the Vine culture, stuff like that. Whereas in reality, it may not be as complex, or I shouldn't say that it's not as complex, because it is, but you know, the ugliness of a few clips is not representative of the whole. I guess that's where I'm going with that. And so from a broad team-wide perspective, I think that's a little bit of the dynamic that's going on. The bigger factor that I see, though, are individual player narratives. The NBA is a star-driven league, and the Rockets this summer have taken a hit on two different fronts. The Vine culture that slams James Harden at all costs, no matter what the data show, you know, we find that one play that James Harden, you know, lost his man, and we share that vine a million times, and all of a sudden we let that speak for his entire body of work. And the flip side of that is the departure of Dwight Howard, who, you know, everyone knows that he has been a dominant defensive player. He's been the best defensive player of the year multiple times, and now he's leaving Houston. So I think there's this kind of subconscious, you know, putting together that, well, now it's fully Harden's team now that Dwight's gone, so that means there's going to be less attention paid to defense. And you know what? The Rockets lost Dwight Howard, who has won multiple Defensive Player of the Year awards in his career. So how can they not be worse on defense? And so I think that kind of just that subconscious, those narratives are just kind of getting into how a lot of the minds nationally perceive the Rockets. But y'all know me, I'm not a fan of those narratives. I'll start with the Harden one because that's my favorite thing to pick apart. I saw an article on Facebook the other day. It certainly wasn't on a site that I follow, but one of those sponsored things where, you know, companies target people who like basketball and try to get new clicks. And it was this debate, who's the best shooting guard in the NBA? And it had pictures of Klay Thompson, James Harden, and Jimmy Butler. And I would say most basketball fans, of course, selected James Harden as the best. But there were a contingent who said, well, Klay, it's got to be Klay. He actually cares about both ends of the court. Harden only cares about one, which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, for starters, if you try to say that Klay Thompson is more valuable than James Harden, you're either extremely biased, uninformed, or you just don't understand the sport of basketball. It's that simple. Harden is a much better player in terms of his overall value. He carries an offense at an MVP level, the likes of which Klay Thompson cannot even come close to. He is a supporting actor in Stephen Curry's show in Golden State. James Harden runs the show in Houston. It is an apples and oranges comparison. But even looking at defense, we all think that, you know, we're aware that Harden slipped defensively from 2014-2015 to 2015-2016. And he did. I'm not going to deny that. But you need to actually look at the full body of work, not just a few vines, and say, well, this guy doesn't care. This guy is terrible. Yes, he was worse. However, how it went down was he came to camp out of shape because of the off-season ankle injury. He was poor defensively in October, November, and December. I think it goes without saying that, of course, Harden was the guy that J.B. Bickerstaff was calling out with his post-game comments after they lost to New Orleans after Christmas. And really, from January onward, from January through the end of the season in April, I thought Harden was pretty good. He was very close to the level he was at a year ago, and we were all pleased with him. It's just his overall numbers took a step back because, you know, the first third of the year, he was working himself into shape. And, you know, that's not excusable. I think he's learned from it. I think that's why you're seeing him push himself and his body so hard this offseason. But he was a worse defensive player. However, when you talk about predictive value, you have to look at the full body of work and the fact that he did get better throughout the season. That in and of itself is an encouraging thing as you look ahead. More than that, though, look at the data. You know, the plus-minus stat I'm a big favor of. When you look at defensive, the stat is DBPM. Harden last year had negative 0.4 DBPM. Klay Thompson, who everybody says is this great all-around player, negative 2.2. Defensive win shares. Harden had 2.6. Klay Thompson, 2.6. So despite the narrative, despite that, you know, people say, well, Klay cares about it and Harden does not, the evidence does not bear that out. It's just selective application. We think Harden's going to be a poor defender, so we put out these vines of Harden having this momentary lapse and blow it up into this what happens all the time. And we think, Klay Thompson's this lockdown defender, so we put a vine out of him making this great defensive play, and we think this is who he is. And it's not. The evidence shows that they're fairly similar players on the defensive end of the floor. But at the same time, it's easy to put that stuff out, and, you know, even the national accounts do it, and they point out that, well, you know, they just want Harden to get better. You know, they're just pointing it out, And it's true, you know, they say that they get the bigger picture, but when you fixate on that stuff, and a lot of these national sites, they know they get a ton of hits from putting out these types of vines. You know, that's why SportsCenter runs with the Harden package seemingly once a day during NBA season. It's impossible for that not to sink in just a little bit to your subconscious in terms of how you're framing the Rockets and your expectations for them. So I think what happens, why are the models seeing something that humans aren't? Because the models see that James Harden is not a disastrous defensive player. Now, he's not a good one. As I said, he did decline. Let's go back to, what, defensive win shares. Harden had 2.6 defensive win shares this past season. When in 2014-2015, he had 4.2. So, yes, he did decline. No, he is not a bad defensive player. He's not a liability. And then you put him next to Pat Beverly and Trevor Ariza, that can actually be an above-average 1-3 defensively. And actually, if you want to point to where they slipped last year, Salman Ali, our buddy at Red Nation Hoops, he pointed out a couple weeks ago that Trevor Ariza, after about the fifth game, was inexplicably poor on defense. And I would agree with that. It looked at times like he just didn't care. Now, you know, you can fault Harden some for that. You can say, well, there was a culture where they didn't emphasize defense enough. And, you know, I would buy into that some. And Harden, as the leader of the team, as the superstar, does he bear some responsibility? Absolutely. But, again, it's just not as simple as saying they can't play defense or, you know, this is who they are. There's a lot of factors at play. And so there's a case to be made, fresh faces. When you just look at the roster, this can be, especially from the 1-3 spots, a pretty good defensive team, especially if Pat Beverly's healthy and, you know, Ariza is not overused. Because a little bit of what happened to Ariza, you know, yeah, some people say he didn't care. Another, he was just severely overused. You basically had Ariza as your secondary playmaker after James Harden, and that's not what he's meant to do at all. He's meant to be a classic 3-and-D guy. And so hopefully after adding the likes of Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, you could have Ariza get back to what he does, that 3-and-D a little more, and be able to preserve his body for the defensive part of the equation. The other part of the equation is Dwight Howard and replacing him with a little bit of an unknown commodity in Clint Capela. Look, I like Dwight. He's a good guy. He works hard. But let's not act like that the Rockets let the 2011 version of Dwight Howard walk away, because that's not what happened. His defensive win shares the last 2 years, 2.2 and 3.1. Now, I know those are a little artificially low because of his injuries, but, well, first off, his injuries were a part of the problem. If Clint Capela is healthier and a more stable presence in the starting lineup relative to Dwight the last 2 years, then that in and of itself should make them a better defensive team with more continuity. But it's not just the injuries. His overall efficiency went down too. His DBPM, which is based on just simply the plus-minus when he plays, 1.8 this past year, 1.2 in 2014-2015. That's down significantly from a peak of 5.0 in 2009-2010 with Orlando. And likewise, the win shares. I mentioned 2.2 and 3.1. When he was at his peak, 2010 and 2011 in Orlando, 7.1, 7.7. The year before that, 7.6. So he has fallen off dramatically on defense, even if he brands himself, and certainly Dwight's had a very positive press tour this summer, went home to Atlanta, he and his agent have pointed out all the good things about him, and people want to believe in him, especially, you know, in Atlanta, it's a homecoming, people want to buy in. But there has been slippage on both ends of the court. The main thing with Dwight are the injuries and the athleticism. We know that he doesn't have the springs he once had, parts of it because of the knee issue, we know the edema, the swelling, part of it, the back. No one that has back surgery is ever quite the same afterward. Bottom line with Dwight, he doesn't have those springs anymore. And, you know, offensively, you can see it more because he's not able to get those quick alley-oops and dunks the way he once did. But defensively, where you see it, he does not cover the court the way he once did. Bigs that can play in space and play on the perimeter, Al Horford, for one example, torched him last year. Al Horford took him out to the three-point line, and he exposed the fact that Dwight Howard was not willing to come out on the floor. Also, bigs that play a high degree of pick and roll, you know, pick and pop. Dwight always, I shouldn't say always, because of course there are exceptions, but he routinely tries to go under, he routinely tries to sag, he gives up that open 16 to 18 footer, and teams abuse that. I think of Nene, now a Rocket, doing that to him with the Wizards a couple of times last year. He is not the player he once was. Yet I think there's just this perception that, well, you know, when you're losing Dwight Howard, a guy who historically has been great at rebounding and defense, and really still is from the counting stats, you know, still one of the best big men in the game, especially in this era of basketball with fewer dominant big men, that, you know, people just think, how can the Rockets not be worse? Because you're taking away a guy who historically has been a great defender, and, you know, it's a team that's built around Mike D'Antoni and James Harden, two guys that have not historically been known for their defense. But the actual numbers, the actual metrics from the past few years do not, they don't bear it out. And as I said earlier, Mike D'Antoni, he gets a bad rap. Yes, he is an offensive-minded coach, but really, when you look at the efficiency of those defensive teams in Phoenix, they were middle of the pack. They were in the teens, 13, 14, 15, 16. And if you have a top-ranked offense, can you win with that? Absolutely you can. And really, you could argue that maybe those teams were even better than that defensively, because inherently when you play as fast as those Suns teams did, the pace is going to be so much that it's always going to be a lot of point scorers. There's always going to be some transition lapses because, you know, just playing that way on offense inherently lends itself to challenges for your defense as well. So realistically, his defenses might would have been better. So the narrative that, well, you know, Harden and D'Antoni, they don't care about defense. Dwight's the one guy that did and it's gone. Sorry, that's just Charles Barkley simpleton talk. And again, I'm not accusing these great writers, Kevin Pelton, Matt Moore, Zach Harper, they are way smarter than Charles Barkley. I'm not linking the two. All I'm saying is I think there can be a subconscious bias that seeps in when you just see nothing but these vines and this constant parade of narratives that kind of, you know, detract from the reality. In reality, the Rockets have a chance to be a decent defensive team. 1-3, Beverly, Harden, and Ariza, those can all be average or better defensive players. Off the bench, KJ McDaniels can be a really good one. Corey Brewer can certainly have his moments. And at center inside, Clint Capela moves far better than Dwight Howard did. In terms of contesting on the perimeter, making things happen in space, he can be a huge upgrade. And Nene, yes, Nene is not a good, you know, counting stats guy. He's not a shot blocker. He's an average rebounder. But if you watched him in the Olympics, he can hold his spot on the floor. He is a good position defender. He is very smart. So the combination of him and Capela, if there's one thing you worry about with Capela, you know, he does have a tendency to pick up cheap fouls and he's young, so it may take years to work that out. But, well, now you offset with Nene, a guy who's very savvy and typically doesn't foul a lot. So, you know, while the big picture headlines, if you just look at superficially, I see why you might think the Rockets are a, you know, take a step back defensively. Reality, I'm not sure that's the case. And again, these models, they're not even counting for what I consider the ultimate X factor, which is Giannis Antetokounmpo. If he re-signs, and I think that's certainly likely at this point, there's not a lot of money left on the market in September, and, well, even if someone else did sign in, the Rockets have the right to match any outside offer since he's a restricted free agent, I think that's only going to further help the Rockets defensively, because Antetokounmpo, when he's healthy, he's an at least average, if not above average, defensive big. Very smart, very long, he can hold his own in the low post in a way that Ryan Anderson can't. So right now, your power forward, if you're making a depth chart for the Rockets, you'd have Ryan Anderson starting at power forward, and then you'd have some combination of Michael Beasley behind him, Montrezl Harrell, a few spot minutes for Trevor Ariza in small ball. Yeah, that can be a little spotty. But all of a sudden, you put Antetokounmpo, you know, in that power forward mix, that can improve it even more. So again, ultimately, I'm not buying the Rockets as a good defensive team. All this optimism, I'm not trying to be a homer and say, well, everybody's wrong and they're going to come out and dominate. No, they're not. There are obvious limitations. Ryan Anderson, not a good defensive player, and you didn't pay him $80 million not to play. You're just going to have to live with that. Clint Capela is unproven. And James Harden, you know, I don't think he's going to be a bad defensive player, but with the workload that he has on offense, it'll be reduced a little this year with Gordon and Anderson, but he, you know, he's never going to be able to expend the effort defensively that, you know, is needed for him to be truly elite. There's always going to be a degree of trying to hide him so that he can conserve his energy and be the MVP candidate on offense that the Rockets need him to be. All I'm saying is that the team can be mediocre defensively. That's why I think the models are showing them 15th, 16th in the league. And if they are a middle-of-the-pack defensive team, this should be a very good basketball team. Because you combine a top-five offense with a defense that's about 15th, that should be a team that's, you know, at worst, top five or six in the West, if not higher. Really, if you have an offense that's closer to top two or three in the league, then yeah, you can make a push for winning 50-plus games with this group. So, you know, again, I understand where I think some of these analysts are coming from. I just disagree. And if I had to bet, I'm betting on the models rather than the analysts. So on that positive note, I think we can wrap up this first show of September 2016. Again, this is Locked On Rockets, the most frequent podcast covering the Rockets. Within a couple of weeks, once we get closer to training camp, we will be back to a full daily show, so get ready for that. We've also got some great interviews in the works, just waiting on some things to get signed and some official press releases to get put out by the Rockets. But keep your eyes peeled, because we are going to have some very exciting things for you in the weeks ahead. You can follow the show on Twitter and talk to us at Locked On Rockets. And if you're interested in being a sponsor like SeatGeek, you can reach out to us at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com for any sponsorship inquiries. We've got some really great rates, a very targeted and intense demographic that I think can be a benefit to a lot of businesses. And of course, you can interact with me directly on Twitter at Ben Dubose. Always happy to talk to anybody, especially if it pertains to the Houston Rockets. This is my passion. Love talking Rockets and love having you along for the ride. And again, remember, today's Locked On Rockets brought to you by SeatGeek. Download their mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets, and the promo code LORockets will get you a $20 rebate in the mail off of your first purchase. Thanks again to them. Thanks again to you for listening, and I will be back with you very soon. Good night.